Aria, and welcome back to another episode of Fembolden. Today, Katie and I are super glad to be back. We did take a week off just for our listeners to listen to their favorite Her Stories or interviews for the start of International Women's Month and International Women's Day. And, you know, we haven't had a conversational episode in a long time. We've been doing a lot of interviews, which is so great because we've been able to connect with so many amazing young women from across the globe, which is such a privilege. But it is nice to just kind of talk and sit back and relax. So today we'll be talking about intersectionality, white feminism, just the importance of having important or pivotal or influential or inspirational female roles in our life, and just, yeah, a bit of life updates and just kind of chatting with you guys. We hope you guys can just sit back, relax, and tune into this episode.
Right. I think our conversational episodes are very relaxing, and I just feel like everyone can just take a breather and just, you know, listen and agree with us.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree.
I just want to start off by asking you, like, how have you been mentally, and just how has your life been going at this point in time?
Yeah, I would say that recently at our school, we've started hybrid learning. So we're back at school a few days a week, which is really amazing for my mental. I mean, we talked about this in past episodes, is that invasion of privacy that, you know, came with COVID, and how, like we've said, our home, which was formerly a place of solitude and comfort, is now everything. Your office, your classroom, your gym, your studio, which is very draining mentally, and it's very hard if you don't have that separate place to work or to work out or to attend school, and blurring those lines is really difficult. And it's such a minute thing we don't think about, but it does have a very big impact on just how we view our home and how we go about e-learning. So definitely being back in school and just being able to learn in a learning environment and to connect with some of my teachers for the first time ever and just have face-to-face conversations is absolutely so amazing. And we literally went back 363 days after our last day of school, which was just insane to just be back in the school. And like I said, learning in a learning environment. So how would you say hybrid learning's been for you? And like, how have you been mentally?
In terms of hybrid learning, I've enjoyed it. I have one of my close friends in the majority of my classes, and it's nice to, you know, see my teachers that I haven't seen in almost a year and just get back into a more routine type of day. Overall, I feel like I've been a little stressed, only because I feel like third quarter is probably the hardest time for me in terms of school, because I feel like that's kind of one of the hardest quarters where everything's starting to wrap up and you're prepping for these big tests and big assessments. So I've been trying to work through that, but I'm trying to be persistent because we're going to graduate soon, and I'm excited to see where we're going to end up in the future. So I think kind of when we near the end of the year, I'll be doing a lot better mentally.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's so interesting that you bring it up, because throughout high school, these past 4 years, third quarter has been undoubtedly and ceaselessly, the hardest quarter, absolutely the hardest quarter to get through. I think it's because you're in that weird space of coming back from winter break and like the relaxation that comes with that, but also you're not quite at the end of the school year, and it's literally like the last push, because fourth quarter is definitely more chill, especially because we're seniors,
right?
Because we already know we end school earlier than the rest of the school does, as well as like, we don't, not to say that seniors don't care about AP exams and finals, but by the time those things occur, we're already accepted into our colleges or knowing what we're going to pursue in the future, whether it be a trade school or going to a JUCO, something like that, entering the workforce. So like, fourth quarter is really chill typically. Obviously COVID has changed everything, but even with COVID, like even with all of the insane changes that have come about with coronavirus, I have still had third quarter so difficult for me. I think that's so interesting that we have had such different high school experiences, although there are similarities. We obviously have had super different experiences, and for us to have that parallel is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that a lot of high school students can connect with. I don't know why, but that's really cool. And like, this is kind of strange, but I'm kind of going off topic, but it feels really good to have this conversational episode right now, because it really feels like, you know, we're approaching our 1 year anniversary of Fembolden, and
right,
it feels like we're really getting back to our roots right now, which uh-huh. is really cool to just see how we've grown over the past year, like the amazing people we've been able to talk to, you know, the amazing things that I've come with Fembolden. And like I said, just having this conversational episode right now is so relaxing. I cannot say it enough. Like, this is just, we have our old formatting, our old editing style right now. We're really going yeah. back to like Fembolden 101. Yeah, it's very nostalgic. And you know, now that we've gotten, you know, past the intro and our life updates, now we are going to talk more about intersectional feminism and just International Women's Month, and just how, you know, we think that women, the role that women play in society, and like the importance, like I said, of having influential women in society. And so, like, firstly, I just want to say Fembolden is an intersectional podcast. It always has been. That's always been everything we've been doing is centered in intersectionality. So just to give you guys a definition of what intersectionality is, if you don't know what it is from listening to our previous episodes or following our comprehensive guides on our Instagram at Fembolden Podcast, intersectionality is an analytical framework for understanding how aspects of a person's social and political identities combine to create different modes of discrimination and privilege. And that's from Wikipedia.org. I think that's so credible. I think that I could not describe or define intersectionality in a better way. And so the reason that Fembolden is centered in intersectionality is because you cannot achieve true equality and equity if you're not viewing things from an intersectional lens. Mm-hmm. Like we've said before, you cannot address climate change without addressing racial inequity. You cannot address racial inequity without addressing systemic homophobia or anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. And so in order to address these problems at their core and to effectively aid societal problems like that, you have to be centered in intersectionality, which, like I've said, all of our episodes are about intersectionality. We have always covered a very, very, very broad range of topics about intersectional feminism. So, yeah, I would just say, Katie, how do you think that intersectionality has affected you as a feminist? And how do you think on a day-to-day basis that you kind of include intersectionality in your activism?
Yeah, so I feel like it's, to me, intersectionality is crucial because as a Black woman, not only do I have to worry about my struggles as a woman, but also the systemic racism that like I face every day in this country. And ever since we started like a year ago, I feel like my understanding of intersectionality has grown, just, you know, having these conversations and seeing these issues occur. Like, honestly, this has been the best year to see all of these issues play out. Like, we had an election year, we've seen the racial inequalities throughout the pandemic, and I feel like as a person I've grown and I have been affected by intersectionality daily, because I get to see you know, how things play out, and like I can examine it from the perspective of like, oh, women are being mistreated in this light, and then also see it in how, you know, there might be racial inequalities. And I think it's really cool for me to be able to analyze things in those two perspectives, because it helps me get a better understanding, and I can see things. And, you know, you can, like, step in other people's footsteps and try to understand things with a bigger picture. And I feel like that having that knowledge helps us, you know, all come together and be able to, you know, agree.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that it's really important to address intersectionality when we're talking about feminism, especially because feminism in its core should be intersectional, but the way that feminism is often portrayed, not only in the media, but by a certain feminist, quote unquote, is like, it's not feminism, right? It's mm-hmm. not truly intersectional in a very, very controversial and rather divisive form of feminism is white feminism. So just to give you guys a little bit of a definition of white feminism is a form of feminism that focuses on the struggles of white women while failing to address distinct form of oppression faced by ethnic minority women or women of color, lacking other privileges. And so oftentimes, you know, we've talked about this kind of in our Girl Boss infographic again, shameless plug to our Instagram at Fembolden Podcast. You can find comprehensive guides on there about intersectionality, feminism, and just activism in general. And this really ties into what Girl Boss feminism is about, and white feminism. They're very hand in hand because white feminists very, very, very frequently fail to address the fact that their white privilege still extends to white women. And I think that a lot of white women think, I am white, but I am a woman, so therefore, all of my whiteness is trumped by the oppression that I face as a woman. So all women are the same. That's not true. There are obviously different layers and levels to feminism and, like, equity and equality. And so white women, oftentimes, we see them in the media, and just, like, the way that they go about things is very much very colorblind in a very negative way. It's very degrading. It's not inclusive at all. It's not very diverse. It's very plain. It's very much like all women should be able to succeed because we're women. And if I can succeed as a white woman, then you should be able to succeed even if you're a woman of color, which is absolutely not true. And I think that white feminism is horrible. And I think that it's something that we should all reject, and we should all be able to very easily and repetitively kind of be able to point out those differences between intersectionality and true feminism and white feminism, because I'm telling you, like, in conservative media and, like, Fox News, they take white feminism and like, that type of rhetoric, and they're like, this is what feminism is, and it's about hating men and thinking women are better, which is not at all what it is, but white feminism does kind of, like, that's very much a part of white feminism, which is something we reject here at Fembolden. And we would say, like, if you're a white woman listening to this, recognize your privileges. Like, be able to see that being a white woman doesn't just mean that you're, like, I'm oppressed, so I don't have to fight. Like, it's white men who are the problem, or it's just men who are the problem, which is absolutely not true. And I think that it's a really nuanced a subject, which we have touched on in other episodes, so check those out. But yeah, like, I think it's really important during International Women's Month to really sit back and, like, be able to reflect on what the importance of feminism is, and, like, misogynoir, and how that plays into intersectional feminism, or lack thereof. And, like, I don't know, I just think it's really important to talk about these kind of things. I'm kind of just rambling on right now because I'm so not used to having this conversational episode, because we've had so many scripted interviews that have been back to back to back, and even if they're not interviews, they've been like her stories or other scripted episodes. So it feels good to talk in this manner. And another thing I heard that was really interesting from one of our listeners, like, of course everyone loves interviews because it's like you feel like you're connecting with someone from across the globe, like, that you may not know. So, like, if you're from Chicago as well, but you're entering, or you're listening to the interview we did with Shalmali, you feel like you're connecting with that young woman in India too, or the young woman like Rhea, or from Health for Her, like, from across different states. And I think that's really interesting, like Arizona, New Jersey, and all those kind of things. But something that I heard that was really interesting was that, like, someone was saying they just love the conversational episodes. They were like, they're just so calming. They're so relaxed. They're just so great to just have in the background and kind of just chill and listen to. And I think that it's, like I said, it's really great to get back to those kind of roots, because we've been doing so many different things, and it feels great.
It feels like you're just catching up with your friend on the phone. And
exactly.
It is relaxing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, one thing I wanted to touch on is that, like, how much I've seen in the media, like, in general, with, like, lots of hatred towards women, women of color, especially, and trans women. And like recently, I don't know why, I've just seen lots of like hate crimes and lots of just, you know, racist discriminatory remarks. And honestly, like, it makes me want to delete my Instagram or just like, I don't know, like, just sit in the comments and argue with people all day. But I know that wouldn't even do anything anyways. And it's just like annoying that people will sit up there and post stuff just to hate on people for something they cannot control, something that they are born with.
Like, exactly.
It's just really aggravating sometimes. And like, you just have to choose to, you know, log off or tap through it and be like,
mm-hmm.
these people are ignorant. I have knowledge and I'm going to continue to, you know, be an advocate for these people and use that as a push. But it's just like, some days you just want to be like, come on, man. Like, you know, slide up, argue.
Exactly. No, and the thing is, something that I've really practiced recently is that I have all of my social media notifications off.
Yeah, me too.
Not that I don't log off of the apps, because with Fembolden, like, I have too much of a platform, and you do as well, to, like, not be on social media. Like, that's right. Not particularly possible with the things that we do. And also, I think, like, with our generation, it's kind of strange to not be on social media. I think it's a really great way to connect with people and to market. But that's a whole different conversation that we've had before. But like, turning off the social media notifications is so effective, because you have to very, very consciously and, like, actively be going, like, I am thinking about Snapchat, so I'm going to go on Snapchat and check Snapchat.
Right.
Whereas, like, if your notifications are on, then you're just going to be like, okay, let me check the Snap. But while I'm here, I'm going to go watch other people's snaps. And I'm bored, so I'm going to go on Instagram, too.
Yeah.
But now I just got a Twitter notification, so now I'm going to go on Twitter. Like, all of those things. And that's so, like, ineffective. And it really boosts your screen time. And honestly, mm-hmm. social media, we've talked about this before. There are so many great things on social media, but there are also really horrible things that are the side effects of social media. So, like, yeah. Just a little side note. Like, if you can turn off your social media notifications, you will feel so much better in the long run. And it'll definitely cut down your screen time.
Yeah, for sure.
But one of the good things that I see a lot on social media is, like I said, those comprehensive guides, those really informative infographics about, like, intersectional feminism, or, like, really influential women that inspire me, or five women you should know. I think that those are so informative. And, like, for example, another shameless plug, Gen Z Her is an amazing youth-led and women-powered, Gen Z-powered organization of amazing young women from across the globe. There's a digital magazine, a podcast that's actually soon to air, as well as just super amazing guys on their Instagram. So check out Gen Z Her on Instagram, as well as, like, some activists that I really enjoy. Rhea Goyal, we had her on one of our episodes. Rhea is the best, and her book, the Gen Z book, I cannot wait for it to publish in April. I believe her Instagram, she just posts really great things. There's yes. a lot of lifestyle. There's a lot of activism. It's just really great. I love her content. So shout out to Rhea, as well as Health for Her in one of our old Instagrams. And Galicia Gordon from Leading Learners, although Leading Learners doesn't have a lot on their Instagram about like informational things. It's more directing you towards the website of Leading Learners, which is obviously such an amazing platform and resource for kids to refer to as they are, you know, seeking education and trying to better themselves as students. So definitely check out, again, those shameless plugs to those amazing young women. I think during intersectional or International Women's Month, it's really important to highlight those young women and just those amazing people who are doing amazing things. So definitely check them out. And also understand, like, there are good things that come from social media, obviously.
Right.
And what else do I want to talk about? Yeah, we talked about white feminism. We talked about intersectionality. What are you thinking?
That video I posted on my story. I think you saw it, too, because you posted it. Of the high school girls team kneeling. Basically, yeah. I think it was, like, in the Midwest area. But mm-hmm. there was, like, a game being recorded or broadcasted because, you know, the virus. And during the national anthem, a team, and I think there were girls of color on there. They kneeled, rightfully so, and the broadcasters, the people, you know, narrating the game, like, called them a slur and just seemed very upset and discouraged about the fact that they were kneeling to the point where he had to call young high school girls slurs.
And exactly.
Then, in his quote-unquote apology, proceeded to say it was due to his diabetes because his sugar was high.
That was
so it, so basically, he got so angry that, and it never would have happened if his sugar wasn't so high. So, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, that was insane. If you don't know what Katie's referring to, this is from We Are The Peace on Instagram. WEARTHEPEACE. And that's where you can find the video. And also the apology, like she said, quote unquote, that was issued. I was a grown man named right. Matt Rowan on Thursday, March 11th, 2021. He allegedly called this group of young women basketball players from Norman High School during a Norman High School girls basketball game against Midwest City. That was the team that he used the racial slurs against, calling them, again, racial slurs, blaming it on diabetes. Honestly so funny to me, because it's genuinely like, you tried, like, you genuinely
he found something
and right was like, I think the most regrettable thing about this, but also the funniest thing about this, that so many white people do when they do heinous acts of racism, is say that they're not racist.
Right.
Like, towards the end of his apology, he says he is not racist. Yes, he did say a racist slur, but he's not racist. And so this begs the question, what is racism then? Like, what is the extent to which you have to act to be racist? And how did you so
comfortably say it? Like, we know this wasn't a first occasion, like, occasional thing, because that doesn't just, you know, slip off the tongue when you're upset or your sugar spikes. No. Like, we've seen instances in politics where people have knelt for, you know, the national anthem, and I'm sure he's had that same reaction. So, it's just the way that they, like, apologize saying they're never racist, but do something so, like you said, heinous and say something so, you know, harsh.
Right. That's just insane to me, like, how you can say to and, children. Like, type with your full chest after doing something racist that you're not racist.
Like,
and
at I least think
that's
it.
Something that, like, right, that happens so often. Because we've talked about this before, there's a common misconception that racism is, like, you have to wear a KKK hood, you have to actively lynch black people, and you don't have to be deporting Latinx people, and, like, do all of these egregious and horrible things all simultaneously to then be considered racist. Whereas there's, like, covert racism, which is still racism, like clutching your bag when a black person walks by, or saying things like, you know, like, over-sexualizing a young black woman or someone who is outwardly female, or calling a young black male or someone who's outwardly male dangerous. That's covert racism. And then there's overt racism, like calling teenage black girls a racial slur. Like, that's all racism. As well as, you know, like, wearing a KKK hood. Like, these all fall into that umbrella. And I think that that's something that we don't talk about. I think it's something that's so normalized in society. And I think it's something that we really, really, really have to actively, like, throw that away. Change our mindsets. We cannot think like that. And that's something I've had to explain to so many of my peers as, like, a teen activist. Is, like, racism displays itself in so many different ways. And we absolutely cannot be complicit. And, like, let racist people get away with racist things, because they don't hate black people. But, like, you do. You just do it in very covert ways.
Right.
That's, like, less noticeable. But, like, you still do hate black people. Like, let's get on the same page here. Like, you're still racist. And I just find it so funny. Like, I really genuinely, like, you literally are admitting to saying a racial slur and then saying that you're not racist. Like, pick a side, man. You don't get to play both cards.
Right. And like you said, how, like, I've also experienced, like, having to explain that to our peers. And, you know, just because you aren't calling someone a racial slur straight up, the racial joke that you're making is just as bad. Like, you know, making jokes or silly comments or being ignorant to issues that are happening, like, in front of our faces is just as bad.
Exactly.
And that's why we get upset. And then when we do get upset, you don't get to tell us, like, calm down, it was just a joke. Because it's not just a joke to us. It's something we experience every day.
Exactly. And I think that that ties in very, very beautifully to what white feminism is in its core. It's like, these are a part of white feminism. These bits of covert racism, this accepting or being complicit in covert racism is a part of white feminism, and it's why white feminism has risen to the top in so many different spaces where intersectionality is really needed and diversity and inclusion is really needed. But white feminism and girl boss feminism and these ideologies are what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And, like, something also interesting that I've been seeing recently is, like, these, like, white spaces doing things like diversity and inclusion, but mm-hmm. then they're, like, not including anyone, and there's no diversity in any aspect. Right. And again, that's just funny to me, because it's, like, you don't have to try to be inclusive. Like, you don't have to, like, hurt yourself to be, like, let's make this space better for persons with disabilities or people of color or you know, LGBTQ+ people. Like, it's not straining you to do that. So it's like you're actively going against being inclusive. I don't know. Right. I just think it's so funny. Like, I think it's so strange. I think the world is really a really funny place. It's like, it's obviously really horrible, but when you kind of take a more lighthearted approach to viewing it, it's kind of hilarious.
Right. And like you said about certain areas with forcing diversity and inclusion, I definitely, like, see colleges that I've applied to and look more into the demographics, and I'm just like, I really don't think I'd feel comfortable here, like, regardless of how amazing a school it claims to be. If I would rather not be in a place where I'd be subject to facing some type of racial discrimination on a daily basis.
Exactly. I definitely agree. And I also think that's something for, you know, our younger audience that has applied to college or is in the process of applying to college or will be soon, or perhaps has already been to college but is trying to gain a better perspective about, you know, Gen Z and, like, our mindset and our approach to intersectionality. I think that's really important for, like, institutions as a whole to see, like, you, especially the institutions, not just the bodies or the people that inhabit them, but the grander, the bigger, more powerful and influential institutions as a whole, to see, like, you have to very, very actively be not trying to be inclusive to not be inclusive, because there are so many qualified and eager people of color and, like I said, people with disabilities and people of the LGBTQ community that want to feel welcome in that space that aren't. So, like, obviously PWIs or PWIs for a reason.
Like, we could go back into
right. There's a whole bunch of reasons as to that. And a school is not inherently uninclusive if it's a PWI, but you are inherently uninclusive if you are a PWI and you're not, as an institution, fighting to make it a more inclusive place. Like, for example, in Marquette, just a few weeks ago, there was an incident where a white couple was saying the N-word and being extremely racist and posted it on social media. And the Marquette Black Student Union, as well as other students rallied against not only that, the people who made that post originally, but, like, the school, because in the comments and in the way that it was kind of told, like, the story, they kept saying, like, this has happened before.
Right.
Marquette is not an inclusive or safe space for people of color, but, like, you're trying to brand yourself as an institution that is. And that's not at all what the case is. And I think that's so upsetting, not only that it happened in the first place, because not only it happened because those people felt comfortable to do it, but also because it's been happening. Like, these mm-hmm. students, the student union, these people who are trying to rally for more equitable and just a more equitable environment for students to learn in, are saying, like, this keeps happening, y'all keep not doing anything, and it's unacceptable. And I think that it's really interesting that in a political climate like it is now, for them to still be not really actively fighting against racism in that regard is very, very telling to that school and that institution as a whole.
Right. No, yeah, I definitely agree with you. And
yeah,
I definitely think that where you end up in college can, like, shape your views if you surround yourself with all those people and you ignore the fact that it is a PWI and they do not, like, work to actively include people of all, you know, areas. And
mm-hmm.
that's, like, a huge factor in deciding for where I want to go in the future, because that's where I'm going to be spending my time without my parents, like, without people to, you know, help me identify who I can and can't trust. And I'm just trying to go to a place where I feel comfortable, because that's where I'm going to be able to become the most successful.
Absolutely. I agree. And honestly, we can go on about this forever. Like I said, I've had a really great time this week, kind of getting back to the norm, having a conversational episode, talking about a really wide variety of topics. And I also think that it's really, it very well illustrates just what's happened over the past year. Like, we haven't reached our 1 year anniversary just yet. We are coming across in the next month. And I don't know, it just feels really great. I think that this episode in and of itself is very indicative of what's happened and the growth that's happened over the past year. So it's really great, like I said, to get back to those foundational type of episodes. And of course, don't forget to check out our Instagram at Thimbleton Podcast, where I said before, we post comprehensive guides, things about activism, and just more informational and insightful content about Thimbleton as a whole and as an organization. So make sure to check that out, as well as check out our website, www.thimbleton.org, for more Thimbleton news, episode descriptions, outreach links, and more, as well as the podcast links. So definitely check those two things out. Check me out on Instagram at ariasline, and then Katie's Instagram is Caitlin Notke, or is it Katie Notke?
Katie Notke, yeah.
Katie Notke, that's also on our Instagram at Thimbleton Podcast, if you want to find our links directly there. And yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode. I had so much fun this week. And remember, Mondays are for Thimbleton. Thimbleton is a teen-led podcast where we discuss a variety of topics surrounding femininity, social activism, and adolescence.
We want to encourage other young women to use their voices to call out issues within their community and on a global spectrum. We appreciate all of our support and believe that feminism should be open to all genders.